Good afternoon, everybody. So glad we're here together, honoring, celebrating. Can everyone please make sure their cell phones are off? And in the meantime, let's take some breath. Let's just be here. Settling in. Like, who likes to come to a funeral, right? But Mark, being the different person that he was, this is going to be a different kind of funeral.
That's M.
M. I'm kind of formal, so I put everybody's formal name on there, so M. All right, we're going to start with a serenity prayer. Ray is Mark's sponsor, so he will lead us in that. Thank you.
My name is Ray Cowan. I am an alcoholic. In the celebration, can we start with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer? Serenity prayer? Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. So, Mark was M, is a fantastic person. We all know that. We wouldn't be here in this beautiful spring day if we weren't here to honor. When we feel the sadness deep into our heart, it's because of love. It's because we're going to miss that. We're going to miss his voice. We're going to miss his chuckle. We're going to miss the twinkle in his eye. We're going to miss his hand on our shoulder. His presence in the room. So when we can go inside and touch the sadness, we'll be able to transform it, because today is like a ceremony. We're in a holy weekend, of course, he would pick this weekend. He likes to hang out with good company. So we're going to do a little meditation, a little prayer together. You could uncross your arms and legs. Centering ourselves into our hearts, into the place we all would like to live from. Into a place that's holy, that's complete, that's beautiful, regardless of who we are, what we've done, and the judgments we have against ourselves. Go deeper beyond our judgment. Go to the place that is most pure. There. This is love. This is connection. This is where we can meet Mark. M. This is where we know the truth. This is where we open ourselves. And we embrace his presence here. We hear his voice here. We ask him questions here. And all the love that we have for M, send it out now, because his spirit is here with us in this room. Expand your heart so big, embracing him, thanking him for everything that he's done for us individually, for us in the community. Heart to heart. Thank you, ma'am. And now in the next breath, receive the love that you know, for sure, you know he has for you. Let him in. Create a little parking spot for him there. And this is how we stay connected, not only to M, but to our ancestors, to our dads and moms, if you believe in God, to the universe, to our best self. and taking three breaths to come back into the room, thanking that experience we had in our heart. M is a magical person. And the magic that he has had, has given us, comes from a very particular place. He's highly educated, wise. You know, he doesn't really claim any religion or any this or any that, but he was born a Catholic and died a Catholic. He had the rites of passage done for him. The last rites of passage. Same. And endings are beginnings. So he's ending this plane and he's beginning another. And he was worried, you know, have I been good enough? I said, Mark, if you ended up in hell, they would look at your credentials and send you back. But that's what we should always be asking. Am I doing the right thing? Am I being a good person? Am I conducting myself in a way that I should be proud if I meet my maker this afternoon? He was always very conscious of his words, of his deeds, of his actions, and the regrets of time that was misused on this planet, I think he's made up for it quite a bit in his last 14 years. He's very diligent not to waste any time. He's had a hard life, ups and downs. Started with one of his brothers was very sick, Lance, and died. And already from childhood, you know, if you get a rough life, you get a rough life. But he turned it around. He made his lemonade. One of the things that he represents to me is the saying on the card that's on your seat about, he would say it all the time in different ways, but the way I have it in my head is, I just want to learn enough so I can turn around and help the next guy. And that was very much Mark. And so I want us to reflect for a moment about what are the three things that he has taught you that you're going to miss the most about him, the way that he's impacted you. And then on that card, write down those three things by the end of the service today and embody those, because if we didn't spend enough time with him, if we just wanted to say some more things to him, if we just could keep him around a little bit longer, we can refer to those three things. Because the diligence that he was working these last 14 years, it's like now it's for us to pick up the work that he was doing and to carry it forward. That's how one person can affect this many people. So if we're that one person, let's take the good that Mark has taught us and turn around and affect another room full and another room full and another room full. I had the good fortune of having Mark on my show. I have an online show, and the producer was kind enough to squeeze some clips in just so we could have him. Of course, Mark, right? Of course, M. Of course he wants to be at his own funeral. This wasn't the intention, but this is how it's turning out. So this is a 10-minute, some video clips of a couple of shows he did with us. And maybe in here you'll hear what are your three things. Wisdom was always flying out of his mouth, out of his heart. So what are the three things that you'll be finding in here? We'll find out. So if we could have the lights, please.
Here. First thing that overall is the general theme is the one thing that overall is the general theme is to wake up with joy and to be able to not be affected by the normal difficulties in life that seem to flood in as you open your eyes and your first look of the day, sometimes quite often is centered around the problems that you have to solve today. And one of the things I'm trying to look at, those are the things that keep us asleep. Those are the things that keep us dancing to this illusion that's not really beneficial to ourselves or anybody else around us. So waking up
with an ability to see the joy of the moment and to see what God has created. And the second thing is to understand that the difficulties in life are opportunities, and that they're there for us to learn and grow. The only bad lesson is one that you don't learn. And a good lesson is one that you see the mistake and you understand what it takes to correct it and you make the necessary adjustments. And you get a different result. And then that really feeds the rest of your results. And then ultimately this leads to real true compassion, is what I think. And a lot of people think that has a lot to do with love of self, and I think that it does. But I also think that it is the most godlike of all the efforts that we can make because of the fact that God is a giver and we cannot give like God, but we get a fine example of what giving is. The idea is when things start to look bad, that's really when we got to double up.
I agree.
And whatever it is that we're doing in our spiritual program, we got to double up. If we're starting to feel uncomfortable and things are starting to not work, that's the ultimate sign of whether something's good or bad. Does it work? If it doesn't work, it's practical. If it works, it's good. So be honest with yourself of what you really mean by work. And that means surrender yourself to the true facts. And that's really the ultimate thing. Really, Bill Wilson said this, you know, that the people who do not recover are the people who are unable to be honest with themselves. So when you want to wake up, and we're talking about waking up, you have to do the things that it will take to wake you up.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that you can do. And then trust that somehow what you believe is right and true and correct, and so it could be accomplished. It could happen.
Excellent.
You know? But maybe not in your timeline or in your, exactly what you think the package should be, or whatever, but it's bound to arrive in such a way that it'll change you. If it doesn't change the physical things that are bringing you past, it will change how you see it, and how you can actually live with them now, without having them upset you. Well, I have a lot of people helping me with this, which I was really surprised at. How many people had come forth to offer me assistance of any kind. And it was quite a phenomenal thing for me to feel that, as far as coming from a healing standpoint, to know that so many people are wishing for you to recover and your life is important to them. And so you have a tendency to be able to get hold of that healing a little quicker than some others maybe. Any advantage you can get in this game, as far as understanding goes, is always a plus. You can't avoid, you know, learning from just about everything that happens. And what happens for me is, late at night, when I'm no longer, I don't have stuff that I have to do, or some book I'm reading, or some program I'm trying to watch on the internet, or on TV, or something, when I'm not doing that, when everything sort of slows down, and I'm supposed to like slow down and get into bed, and I can't. I'm up pacing the floor, you know, thinking about what have I left out, you know, what have I not done, just all the things that one tries to do and tries to shove into and accomplish in their last days. And I'm fortunate because I don't really feel that I have a lot of stuff left that I want to do or something, some bucket list or anything. I'm not enchanted by any of that. I feel fortunate in that regard. But I'm just not taken by that urge to, I got to do everything so much. For one thing, this is all just bull. It's an illusion that we're living in. is all this place, but to put simply forward, you know, it's sad, it's not. It's the only thing that comes along. You know, when you do stuff, and that's why I think it's pretty much stuff to it, but let's face it, we place a lot of store in stuff that really has no value at all. And so, this waking up is trying to get rid of this stuff that's really in the way to begin with. So, if we can get out of that where all these things, it's losing my sense of power, but that's like controlling my actions, you know. And when it starts to control my actions, that's when it's controlling me, and I have no say about where it goes. And that's what leads me in that place where I'm up and down and I'm scared and I don't know whether God is the concept that I've come up with, or whether or not I'm going to be thought of as, you know, God doesn't approve of what I've done with my life or whatever. And but I've always said what I felt would be helpful to those around me. So I think I'm on the right track, but again, I've fallen short so many times that I think, well, what, man, if he decides to hold that against me, I'm in trouble. Yeah.
I also noticed that in the process of dying, we go through a time of redeeming our regrets. So stuff like you were just mentioning, like, oh, I don't know, I kind of messed up over there. And instead of God judging, it's for us to really say, is this forgivable? Is this just being a dumb human? Okay, I'm not the only one making mistakes where I'm here. Can I forgive myself for just being a dumb human? And then I think that's a part of the review process of moving through our regrets. What do you say to that?
It's extremely difficult. This self-forgiveness thing is very hard because, you know, as you and I have discovered, you know, we are the ones that know everything about ourselves. And so it's hard for us to keep a secret from ourselves. And if we're any kind of honest with ourselves, and that's what I always urge in any of this work, is be honest with yourself at the very least, you know. And then you'll find that it's much more easy to be honest with a lot of others. But try by being honest with yourself. It's really about, what do you want? You know, what do you want to create for tomorrow? And that happens by what you do today and the thoughts you have today. You can actually plan your wake up tomorrow morning to include this. To include this in your prayer, to your thoughts on the day, to start your day, and to try to let the negative things only be there for a lesson, not there as a anything else. The only, if you can learn the lesson from it, then it's positive. And try to look for the positive in it, because that's the only way you're going to find it. They're not going to dress it up for you. So you have to look for it. And I believe that you can find it. We found it. Like I say, it's all in brief measures. You know, some days you get a lot of it. Other days you get next to nothing. And other days you get an extraordinary amount that you can't see how you could possibly have been privileged to such information. And other days you'll be surprised that you didn't get nothing. But the chances are you get something out of it, a sense of knowing that you're moving in the right direction. And you're moving in the direction of truth and honesty, which is really what we're all about when it really comes down to it, because we all have to honestly face this fact. And the sooner we get it through our head that it's just, it is what it is, I think the better off we'll be. But I think I've said about as much as I can organize.
Lights, please. That's him, right? In his glory, in his sharing. What's the best thing I can offer?
this person in front of me is the way he thinks. And he really does come from love. I've been thinking about him the last few days, as I'm sure you have. And being around during the dying process, our truth really does come out. I've done hospice work for a couple of years. They say we die as we live. So when the person's dying, you can see their truth. He was sincere. His wife, oh my God, he loves her so much. He was like trying to like, maybe I can just breathe some more so I can just stay alive for you. Even in his pain. The man's got a deep heart and he loves everybody in here, I know it. Because that's how he is. So we're going to listen to some of his family members. I'd like to read a little bit about what Patty has wrote for, about him so we can honor, because we always know our version of somebody, but this is a more encompassing version of who he is. Master finished carpenter by trade, and his passion was service to the Atlanta recovery community. For the past 14 years, M dedicated his life to helping alcoholics and addicts in recovery. He did weekly service work at St. Jude's Recovery Center in Atlanta and worked to carry the message to those who still suffered. He was an ardent supporter of many Native American charities and Feed the Children for the last 30 years. Patty has said, even if he only had a dollar, he'd give some of it away. He was just a generous heart. His spiritual life was varied and active, including the teachings and words of Jesus, the teaching of Paramahansa Yogananda for the Self-Realization Fellowship, and Twin Hearts Meditation Center of Atlanta. That's where he and I met. We have some speakers now to come share what they can, what they will. And I know this is a room full of talkers. We will have an open mic downstairs. But really, to share with each other would be to preach to the choir. It's for us to share with others. It's for us to say, hey, I have this friend, and he's really awesome, and he still lives within me. And when we have something in front of us, and we're like, oh, I'm not going to put my... Think, well, if Mark was here, what would he say? What would he do? Would he hold back? Or would he put his foot in it, hoping that maybe it might affect the other person? That's the kind of guy he'd go out. He'd go out to bat for us. So let's continue his work. Our first speaker is Miss Angela Muir. And she'll be doing a Bible reading. This way, Miss Angela.
Good evening, everyone. Sorry. Patty has asked that I read from John, the 15th chapter, verse 1 through 3. And as we all know, Em did really like the teachings of Jesus. These words, incidentally, were written as a result of a conversation Jesus had with his disciples on the night before he was crucified. The message was for them, but it's very good for us even today. The reading is as follows. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. And then what is friends? Thank you.
Miss Lisa? Lisa Higgins.
So last night at the Self-Realization Center, they did some ceremony and prayer work honoring Jesus for the Easter weekend. And fortunately, just because Anna is a special person and special things happen, this flower thing around the picture here was given to Mel, one of the fellow meditators as well, and she's gifting it to M for the ceremony today. Ms. Lisa.
My name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
And one thing I didn't know about M is he was a follower of the Paramhansa Yogananda, and I'm going to be reading some of his teachings. Death is the culmination of life. In death, life seeks rest. It is the precursor to the greatest happiness, the exquisite freedom from all tortures of flesh. Death automatically dismisses all bodily pain, just as sleep banishes the weariness of aches of the hard-worked body. Death is a parole from the prison of the physical body. When a dear one dies, instead of grieving unreasonably, realize that he has gone on to a higher plane at the will of God, and that God knows what is best for him. Rejoice that he is free. Pray that your love and goodwill be messengers of encouragement to him on his forward path. This attitude is much more helpful. Of course, we would not be human if we did not miss loved ones. The word death is a misnomer, for there is no death. When you are tired of life, you simply take off the overcoat of flesh and go back to the astral world. The boundary of the earth is the cosmic sky. The boundary of the astral heaven is deep, circumventing nimbus, rainbow-like in the seven colors of the spectrum, diaphanous, translucent rays blended with infinite taste and beauty of the Father. Within this astral firmament are the pearly gates referred to in Revelation 21:21. These gates of the luster of pearl are the primary channels of ingress and egress between the vibratory spheres and the vibrationless realm of God, and for the movement of creative forces and souls between the astral and physical worlds.
Thank you, Ms. Lisa. And now Mindy is going to share with us with the watery eye. So Mindy is Patty's best friend since 12 years old. So Mindy's a very familiar with Anne, extended family member. But I really want to say how important it is. We're all about community in this room. How important it is to have friends, to have people who truly love you, who will blow your nose, will hold your hair back when you're vomiting, like those kind of friends, right? And this day is the payoff for putting up with all of her. And you know, we just hang in there with each other. Hang in there with each other. Because things change in life. Bad things happen, uncomfortable things happen, growth needs to happen. When we have our friends by us, everything's okay. They don't have any better answers than we do, but something makes it okay. So this is the love between these two women. I'm so happy to have them together and have Patty be helped in this moment.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Mindy. I just want to tell you real quick that obviously she just told you Patty and I were friends since we were 12, but
somehow M was diagnosed with his cancer at the same time I was experiencing my own personal crises, and we started texting periodically. And of course, he would always text me these profound philosophical things, and I couldn't pronounce the words, which is, and Patty said, can you read that for me today? So I'm going to give it my best shot. And of course, my text back was always like, okay, thank you, and love and peace. Because I could never top that philosophical profound thing. But anyway, this was from, he actually texted me this April 16th in 2016. And apparently, Patty told me this is one of his favorites. It's the, I think it's Mark Nepo or Nepo, I'm not exactly sure, but it's from April 16th. It says, one drop of truth at a time. It is the fullness of our attention to whatever is near that has birds fly out of God's mouth. The months relapse, and the ice enclosing a bent over branch thaws, and the snow drops, and the branch springs back up after its death like sleep. The tree coming in its spring teaches us how to let go into renewal, for this is how the freeze around a broken heart thaws. In another part of the world, small brilliant fish mouth pebbles along the ocean sand, sucking off bits of food and spitting back the rest. This is how they comb the bottom. And these small, limbless creatures teach us how to suffer and move on, how to sift through the what is nourishing, and how to give back the rest. And high in the mountains, away from the eyes of others, a small cave with its singular drip collects clear water that is the heartbeat of the mountain. So the center of the earth itself shows us how to be. One drop of clearness at a time, collecting in the moist center that keeps the soul alive. And at the end of that, he said, you're in my heart. I love you, M.
And up next is M's little brother, Chris. He's been here for days and days and days, forgetting his family and his home and every responsibility. He just wanted to be with his brother. Come.
Wow. Tough act to follow. Ursula said the first thing that I was thinking of on reflection of my brother. I need my notes. We feel both sadness and joy. Sadness in that we'll no longer hear his voice, his telling stories, see his walk as he moved down the garden. And just from a brother's standpoint, just having him around. But also joy to see all these folks here in memory of him, and how he lives on in that memory. The comfort and remembrance of his gifts to all of us. Again, all you knew him as M, but I was always calling him Mark. Just as he called me Christopher. Only my mother called me Christopher, but M called me Christopher too. So that was a term of endearment that we had. I'd like to kind of point out what I think is one of his greatest attributes was his overwhelming capacity to love. He loved all of you. I could never be so articulate. I watch in wonderment at his sayings with Ursula. But his capacity to love drew him in to all of us. And that was his redemption. His redemption from the tortured life he had before he entered the program and became sober. And his act of giving a love to all of you. His caring, his kindness, his empathy. And of that leads to something that's, I think, was from the very beginning. Days that we were growing up, what he was to me as a big brother. Mark was a giver. He always came up with the goods. He always knew what to give us. He would think, my mother, he took after my mother more than anybody. My mother always knew what to give. He never asked for it. He just all of a sudden get it. And he always came up with the goods. He never left anybody out. He always was inclusive. He loved everybody. I know that sounds a little trite and a little overworn, but he had that capacity to love. And of that, he was a giver. He always had words of encouragement and support. He was my protector. I always was glad to call him my brother. Growing up, my oldest brother was afflicted with polio before I was born. And Mark and him were only 14 months apart. His name was Lance. So during the course of our growing up, we had somewhat of an absentee father. So Mark took the reins of being the man of the family. He would do the heavy lifting, taking Lance's wheelchair in and out of the trunk of the car. And I was always trying to help, but he was the strong one. He was the tall one. He was the one that always stepped up. He always knew what to do. He was a great camper. He taught me all the things. He became a life scout. I made it all the way to second class. So he was really a doer, as well as a giver. Mark exemplified the commandment that Angela so eloquently read, and that was to love each other as he loved us. No greater love has one than this, to lay down their life for one's friends. And all you are friends, and Mark would lay down his life for all of you. Mark had many friends that he sacrificed his time, his energy, and tears. He said, "We don't know what's around the corner, but have faith that God is running the show." And I'd like to just close what I have to say with the prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Thank you very much.
More love, you see? And it's when people go away, we miss them, but we always think more fondly of them. It's like they're all their yucky stuff, all their habits, all their, that just fades away, and only the best of that person stays. And Mark M. was one of those people who he has a lot of best. So it's to capture this time, right? Capture, tell each other stories, remind, reach out when you're feeling lonely, and really understand the depth of who he was. Even though he was out in front a lot, there was a lot going on behind the scenes for him, a lot going on inside, a lot of work to become a spiritual person like he is, a lot of work. But worth it. Look at this room full. It's worth the work. Now we're going to hear from his nieces and nephews. Eddie will be the first one.
Hello, I'm Eddie.
Hey, Eddie.
Just Give me a moment to get it up on the phone. It feels like the school project you can never prepare enough for. Amazing, thoughtful, generous, loving, and selfless. These are just some of the words that describe Mark Pendrell. If someone didn't know him and they heard that there were all these people standing here just here for him, they would think it's crazy. But everyone here understands why. He affected every single one of you. From the first few seconds you spend in a room with Mark, you already get a sense of how thoughtful and intellectual of a person he is. If there's a place that you can find the most amazing things that you never knew you knew, but like things that you never knew you need, but you do need, it'd be Patty and M's house. He could always give meanings to the things and appreciate simple things. For example, this bolt I carry, it was passed down to me. So, and it's a little container, you can put things in it. It's kind of cool. He didn't tell me what it was for. He just said it was one of his most prized possessions. He didn't tell me the backstory behind it, just that he valued it. And it's, this bolt is symbolic to me in the sense that it holds the bond that me and him shared together. No matter him being present physically or not, we'll still be together. I love you, Uncle M. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Melina. I was 7 when I first met M. I heard good things, that he was a cool hippie dude with long curly hair and thrift store fashion finds. But I needed to assess the situation for myself. Could he really be this fascinating? Did he really wear a beret? I wasn't so sure. When we met, he offered me a lollipop, and in the spirit of skepticism, I turned it down. I couldn't let him get too confident. But those games didn't last long. We became fast friends that afternoon. It quickly became clear that M was not only as cool and interesting as everyone had promised, but that he was also more kind, funny, intellectual, and generous than I ever could have imagined. We only saw each other intermittently in the years that followed, but every time we picked up like old friends. We danced the night away at a family wedding. We tried to talk metaphysics and the meaning of life while hiking Kennesaw Mountain. And we always got a little too political whenever we could. I'd like to think our souls knew each other in a former life. Maybe that's why we felt so connected so quickly. That could be true, but I also think M had a way of making you feel at home, of making you feel understood. Whether you saw him every day, every few years, or just once, he made you feel known. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Leah. So first things first, I am thanking everyone on behalf of Patty and the family for supporting us and Em and Patty through the last few years and taking him to meetings and doctor's visits and bringing food by and just sitting and hanging out and because Em loved to hang out. So, but I also want to thank the Heavy Hitters and the NABA Club and Twin Hearts Meditation and Barbara and the Women of WOW and the men and women who helped to pull this service off. It is exactly what we had planned. So, yes, thank you. Give yourselves a round of applause because it's so beautiful. And, you know, it is very sad, of course, and but I knew that this would be a lot of fun and good laughs and really beautiful arrangements. So, and I think everybody has kind of said what I wanted to say because I met him when I was 11, similar to Melina's story where it was like we heard about the cool dude and he was really tall with the beret and Patty was like, you're going to love him. And so naturally I did. And so I was thinking a lot about what I wanted to say today and I was kind of stressing out about it. And I was in a moment of meditation just first thing in the morning and Em's voice was so clear to me that it was to talk about love, and I don't want to talk a whole lot, but I just wanted to say how important it was that Em was never afraid to express his love. And he was constantly saying, I love you, and I care for you, and I imagine everyone in this room felt that way, and so I want to tell all of you, I love you, and thank you for being here.
I'm Max, I'm an alcoholic. And Em, he was always a mystery because, like, he made no sense at all as a human being. And as a child, I was smaller than I am now, and Em was my size that I am now. And so as a child, he scared me because he'd come in the room and he didn't talk like this. He talked like this, and he kind of terrified me, but he was such a good person that it was hard to ever truly be scared of him. But what was interesting about growing up with Em and the family was, like, I got older and I matured, and Em did too. And at Thanksgiving, Em at first wasn't always quite in tune with, like, the conversations going on. So, like, if we're talking about Atlanta and Atlanta traffic, Em be eating and look up, oh, I love cardinals. Cardinals are beautiful birds. We're like, Em, but we're talking about Atlanta traffic. No, I get it, but there's a ton of cardinals in Atlanta, and I like when I see them. Like, okay. So, that's relevant. And, but, it, I mean, as the years went by, though, the more that I think Em matured into a person that was really intellectual. And we started having these conversations, and they were seamless, and they made sense. And he stopped being as scary of a person, and just my weird Uncle Em, with his berets and his flannel shirts and, like, and his Converse, and just his cadence and how he spoke and the way that he just operated as a human being. It was so unique. But Em also missed out on a lot of family events because he was at a meeting. And growing up in a family of recovery, like, if someone says they're at a meeting, like I knew that, like, it wasn't a weird thing that you're at a meeting. I just didn't know, like, what meetings were, like, what the whole point was, and, like, it seemed excessive. Like, Em, how was the meeting? Wow, great excuse. But, you know, I found myself in a point of life that I had to start going to meetings. And it all started making sense. When I got out of treatment within like 2 days, Em sent me a guy's number. He said, hey, you know, give him a call. And I called him and he just wanted to talk. And I got to see, like, Em just wanted to help people. And there was nothing more he really seemed to want. And of course, like, Em was really smart, and he could have had so much just amazing other things in his life, but he put so much focus on just wanting to help people. And that's why we're all here today. And I don't really meet people like that anymore, or very often. And I found out that M truly cared when I'd gone to a new sober living, and I'm sitting on the couch. My new roommate walks in and said, "Hey, you just come back from the Rockies." He's like, "Hey, you must be M's nephew." I'm like, "This is weird, but yeah." "I am M's nephew." He says, "Oh, you know, you're all dressed up, you're going to work." I said, "No, I'm going to a funeral." He's like, "Oh, well, it was good to meet you." And then I realized too that I'm Max, I'm an alcoholic, but in this community I'm also M's nephew.
Yeah.
And that's never gonna change in certain circles. And I never gave him the credit he deserved in that moment. But he became a legend to me after that, because like everybody seemed to know him. And I began to appreciate everything he had gone through. Because all that was ever really explained as a kid is like, "Well, honey, M did a lot of drugs." And he's a very special character, because it's like, okay, well, I guess. And I didn't know what it took for him to get to the point that he got to. But once I got to see the transformation and look at it in retrospect, it gave me a lot of respect for him. And then when he got diagnosed, like it sounded bad, but he seemed okay. And then I started to get this theory that M couldn't die, and like, I didn't really want to let go of that. I'm like, well, like, no one shoots dope for that long, it doesn't die. Like, M must be immortal. And I got to spend more like quality time with M in the last 6 months than I really had previously. And that's when I really started getting lessons from him that I wasn't able to absorb before. And what one was giving to others, but the other was forgiveness. And I was struggling earlier this year where I was just had an inability to forgive other people. And it just so happened that I do photography too, and M was like, "Oh, well, I'm one of these videos, like I want to continue these videos on forgiveness." And so it just started me filming these videos for forgiveness, but I took so much away from it. And that really helped shape my perspective there, because M is one of the few people, when he talked, I really did listen. Whereas other people, I'd sort of listen and then question. But I knew with everything that M had gone through, he was someone I could listen to and not doubt it. And not have to question it for myself and just take it for everything that it was and that he meant it all. And one time he told me, he said, and he teared up when he said it, was that he went through all the hell that he did previously just so other people like myself didn't have to. And I had heard that before in the rooms. I'm like, all right, well, whatever. Like, show the ego. But when Dan said it, it made more sense than ever before, and I felt it, and I knew he meant it. And then in his last days, I finally got to give back. I got to help him. And it was amazing it coming full circle. But I knew that we would never have another conversation again. And the last word I heard him say was, "I gotta pee." And that was just okay, you know? Because everything that M could give me, I got. And the forgiveness aspect that he taught and he meant, I got it. In the way that he was so unrelentless, or so just willing to give back, I absorbed that too, and I got that. And I wish there were more lessons I could get from him actively. But I know he gave so much to other people, I'll continue to get them and not even realize that and pass it on. But he'll always be my weird Uncle M. And that's it.
So beautiful. Speaking from the heart. Dan, if you could please come. Dan's been busy cooking food for us.
Yay, Dan.
He's the all-around man here.
My name is Dan. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here.
It's good to be here every day. I'm working. I could sum M up in one experience we had. When he started getting sick, he depended on rides a lot more. And one day he asked me to give him a ride to Napa. You know, so he gets in the car, and I've got I have a CD, and it's an old Bird CD from like the early 70s. And he goes, "Have you listened to that CD, that speaker CD that I gave you?" I said, "No." He goes, "Well, why don't you get that goddamn Bird CD out of there that you've been listening to for 35 years and put it in?" And that was him. Here's a guy who's got a lot of rough edges. Here's a guy who has no nuance. And here's a guy who wants to share what's important to him with you, but he wants you to do it now. You know? And you know, I was just attracted to that rawness, to that honesty, to that unique capability that he had to reach to get through to newcomers. I mean, the guy was the perfect sponsor for newcomers, and he touched hundreds of lives in the Atlanta area, and he was a giant in recovery. If any of you are familiar with the Jewish tradition, there's a word in Yiddish called mensch. You know what a mensch is? A mensch is a guy who does the right thing. Even if he doesn't want to, he does the right thing. He takes care of his family. He gives to others. He's of service. He loves animals. He gives a shirt off of his back to his friends and family. He lets them know how much he loves them. He walks through life and he gives 10 times more than he got. I mean, look at this room. Look at how many lives this guy touched. You know? We all carry him inside of us. You know, his physical being is not here, but his spiritual being is here in each and every one of us. You know? I just want to keep it short and sweet. You know, there's an old axiom in show business, always leave him wanting more. That's him. Thank you.
Well spoken. And next is Terry and Steph Friend.
Hey everybody, I'm Terry Alcoholic. Hey. I was thinking I'm the only one didn't write something down. And I don't think he would appreciate that from me anyways. And I was thinking about him and the journey that him and I had together in recovery, you know, and we really got close when he asked me to speak at Backroom Narcotics Anonymous, and I went there, and he was telling me, he said, "You got to do it this way, and you can't, they're really structured, you know, and you can't screw up, you know, and, you know," and to me, you know, all I wanted to be is accepted, you know, and I think that's what we all wanted, is to be accepted from our peers, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous gave us a way to do that, to be useful and part of people's lives, you know. And and I used to sit down and talk about the Great Spirit, you know, and it went from the Great Spirit to God. You know, and the journey we had to get through by helping others and working the steps with people, and that to find a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And that's what happened with him, and that's what happened with me through our journey. And he was coming back from Augusta, where the dentist told him. I talked to him on the way back, and he said the dentist said he found something wrong in my mouth, and I better go and see a specialist. You know, and the next day he was there. You know, then I talked to him when he got out, and he says they think it's I got to get a biopsy. You know, from that day on, he worked extra hard with people in recovery. And he felt that he took so much from life, he wanted to give something back to life, you know. And he sat with my wife and I. My wife is in surgery for 8 hours, and he come to the hospital, and my mother-in-law and father-in-law was there, and he sat for that whole time while she was in surgery, and waiting for her to get out. You know, that was the kind of guy he was. And not talking about the arguments we had. You know, there was a lot of MS and everything else, you know. And talking about his sponsees, too, you know. By the way, Ray, will you stand up? And everybody that M sponsored, will you stand up, please? We would like you to do is everybody sign this, that who his sponsor and who he sponsored, so we'll have that for Patty. And M, we accept you. Look at the crowd you brought in. You know, you're part of our lives. You know, and you always will be. And you're a good friend to me. And anytime I was in. We needed to talk to somebody. He understood because I understood him. You know, and so thank you.
And now we'll hear from Phil. Phil is another dear friend of M.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Phil. I'm an alcoholic. Patty, thank you for asking me to share a little bit today. I first met M in 2005, and I had been in treatment and got out, was actually discharged on a Saturday in May, and I went to the 11:30 a.m. meeting the next day, Sunday, and I shared, and I said, you know, I just got out of treatment. They told me to get a temporary sponsor, so I'm looking for a temporary sponsor. So after the meeting was over, he came up to me and introduced himself. And I had seen him around in the past off and on, but I'd never met him. And he said, you know, my sponsor was telling me it was time for me to get out and start sponsoring more people. And it was just perfect timing. And despite being in and around AA for 20 years, I never had a sponsor except me. You know? really. And so he was my first sponsor, and he took it very seriously. He took it very seriously. And at that point, he probably just had 2 or 3 years back in the program. But, you know, we started working the steps, and I guess maybe in September, October of 2005, we went on a road trip, and we drove out to Colorado. I have family out there, so we drove, you know, one shot to Denver, and we're there about a week or so, and drove back. But you know, while we were going out there, he said, you know, you need to write your 4-step while you're there. And I had, you know, despite being in AA for 20 years, I'd never done a 4-step. So it was time. And I was at my folks' house, and I did it. It was probably 3 or 4 pages, you know, small printing and bullet points and stuff like that. And so the plan was to do the 5th step on the drive back. So I started, you know, in Kansas at some point, and he was driving, and, you know, it went on. You know, I would share a little bit, and he would jump in and expand on what I had said, and I needed that. You know, I needed somebody to pull a lot of that stuff out of me, and that's what he did. You know, during that 5th step, he said more words than I said, you know, very easily. And I think I finished around Kentucky or something, seriously. And you know, the big thing about that for me was that I felt that I'd finally joined. I'd finally become a member after all the years of bouncing around and not being committed. So, and M was very involved with that fifth step. He was emotional. You know, it was just the real thing. So, you know, we stayed, you know, worked together for a long time. He was a close friend. And that's just the way, you know, I would talk to him. You know, if he didn't hear from me every day, he would get upset, and I would call him, and I would just think, you know, I just got to get off this phone. I got to call him and get the call in. And he would always pounce on something that I said, you know, and you know, as was necessary, got me to speak more and expand more on it. So he just had a profound effect on my life, a pivotal effect on the course of my life for the better. And there are really very few people in my life that I can say that about. And my life has changed radically. I mean, when I came in, I still had a job and an apartment, a car, but I had, you know, I was completely isolated, cut off from family and friends, and I had a very narrow life and experience. And now, thanks to M and, you know, being in AA, my life has expanded. Sometimes too much, I think, sometimes. But, you know, I have a wonderful fiance who's here today, and she's got three young girls, and, you know, I'm selling my house and moving in, and I'm bringing a dog, and she's got it. So I've got a whole new thing that I really never thought of. I never had kids, so this is a whole new thing for me. And none of this would have happened without, you know, getting really connected to AA and getting connected to the program. And it just would not have happened without him. So I think about him almost every day in one way or another. You know, I'm thinking, what would he say under these conditions, or actually, what has he said under these conditions? And so I will always remember him, and he's just a special person in my life. So thank you.
What Phil did not mention is that Em was supposed to be in his wedding on May 7th. So he will definitely be there in spirit. And now we're going to hear from Glenn Davis. He came to Em's book study, and now he's a dear friend.
I'm glad that I'm an alcoholic. Oh, man, I met at a certain point in my recovery, I decided to join a predominantly black meeting, and that's where I met M. M loved everybody. And, you know, we were brothers. One of the things that I have in common with him, I believe, even though I can't absolutely say for sure, is that they say some people are sicker than others. And Bill talks about the bedevilment. And to me, that's the core of our disease. And I think sometimes it manifests by people who have a hard time grasping this way of life. M struggled with that before I met him, and I struggled with that before we met each other. But one of the things that goes with that is that those people, including myself, have to really give themselves to this program. But the bonus of that is, as a result of that, we experience more miracles. And you know, Patty, I want to thank you for allowing us to have the Big Book Study at the house. You know, I've done that a couple of years, and when I decided to stop mine, I came to M's. And if you've never been to the Monday night Big Book Study at M's house, you really missed something. It was really special because it allowed us to address the three parts of our disease, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. We treat the physical by coming to meetings, we treat the mental by working the steps, and we treat the spiritual by helping other people, working with other people. And that was M's thing. And So one of the things I want to do is I want to read three short pieces from the big book. Actually, I actually know. What makes me think when I think of M is in working with others, it says, nothing will so much ensure someone from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. That was M, intensive work with other alcoholics. And then, in going through the book, the last meeting we had ended on this paragraph. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And the last thing that really, really I think about, and I want, with all the guys who've been to the Big Book study at M's house, would you please stand up? No, stay standing. Stay standing. You know how we end that meeting. God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do Your will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over him may bear witness to those that would help, that power, that love, and that way of life. May I do Your will. Go God.
Go God.
So beautiful. You see how this man inspires us to be beautiful. Next, we're going to hear from Melvin Burrow. He'll speak for M's home group called, of course, the Heavy Hitters.
Keep it short.
Yeah. The clock's over there, if you need.
I'm Melvin McGregor, recovering alcoholic. And crackheads who smoke crack alcoholically. This is fun, man. Well, they say that we are people who are not ordinarily mixed, and our salvation lies not in our differences, but in our similarities. And M was one of those guys that I couldn't figure out what I had in common with him. I remember, and the longer we started to hang out, because we used to swim together at the same pool, and he would swim for like 2 hours and backstroke through like a fish, you know, all the different strokes, and then go into the parking lot, and we'll stand outside, he'll start smoking cigarettes. I'm like, what the hell is this, man? And I remember when he struggled in the beginning, he was a really angry guy. He was pissed off. He said this God thing was not a part of his thing. He thought that God had it out for him. Everybody else got their stuff. And where's his stuff? And it seems like everybody's getting over. And we had the pleasure at the Heavy Hitters group, you know, we're a radical group. Because we believe in disease concept of addiction and alcoholism. Although it's an AA group, there's a lot of heroin addicts and crackheads in the Heavy Hitters. So we sort of stretch the singleness of purpose. And as a result, we get a lot of hate for that. You know, to say we're not really an AA group and we're not really alcoholics. But it takes unique people like this motley crew to get together and some powerful stuff happens in those rooms. And as long as I've known him, the more we talked, because me and Costa had to talk him down from the roof a few times, getting out the pool. I said, man, how can you swim for an hour and a half and you come out and you're still pissed off? I thought he was supposed to be, you know, just supposed to take care of some of it, take some of the edge off. And then we get into these political discussions, you know, and he would give me one of the most profound discussions we had was after we had swam, and this is when we've gone to the back room. We had the same home group in NA also. And we were saying, you know, he was talking about the Native American, how they got screwed, and I was talking about the African Americans, how they got screwed. Then we got into the government conversations, you know what I mean? And then we came up with this epiphany that the trouble starts when I try to see the world through somebody else's eyes and not through my own eyes. And we made this pact that we wouldn't go, you know, continue to argue, because I'm trying to give you my perspective, he's trying to give me his perspective. He says, all I have is my experience, so I can only give you what I got. The confusion comes in when we start mixing and assuming that somebody, everybody should see this. You don't see this? You know. And that sort of, you know, tempered them down. You know, we refrained from getting those kind of conversations. And I'm still thinking, what do I have in common with M? M was an opiate addict, I was a crack addict. And our ability at, especially in heavy hitters, that honesty is infectious. Once you hear someone share from their heart and that spirit, you know, it's like, I want to do that too. If he can do that, I can do that too. And lo and behold, we get better. One of the things that I loved also that he would give me music. You know, we were mainstream jazz guys. Check out this guy in here, man, in 1963. Did you hear it? You know, he was always egging me on. Did you listen to it? I didn't get to it yet. But he was a perfectionist, and he was the principal person behind, you know, our group. We've been together for 25, 26 years. About 10 years ago, we started getting nomadic. Every year and a half, we were moving from one location to another location to another location, and we just found this new space and where we are now in Moreland Avenue, and I solicited his assistance because he's a master carpenter. But I didn't know how he was a master. He's a master. That shit's out of control. I mean, like, come on, man, relax already, right? And the guys in the group, everybody, you know, it was an old liquor store, right? We meet in the old liquor store. Directly across the street from the drive-in theater in Moreland Avenue. And we had to raise money. It was a major effort. We got the group together. We had an ad hoc. We found a location. And I said, man, we got to knock these walls down. We got to do it. He came in and did his assessment. And he was expecting everybody to be as enthusiastic as we were. And you know, you got the big group, and then you got the core group. So me, my sponsees, M, and his sponsees, and a few selected guys just started tearing the place down, rebuilding it back up. We had these coolers in remember the coolers? The coolers was in the big room for like 3 months. The preacher wouldn't move the coolers. It was real chaotic. He had a lot of conflicts. He was arguing with people. We were running people off. And eventually, everything calmed down. You know, everything calmed down. And that building would not be there the way it is now. We've been there going on 6 years, 7 years, had it not been for him. And that was a testament to his dedication. And he cussed a lot of people out. Where you been? You were supposed to be at 3 o'clock. You guys are worthless. Da, 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 da. But we loved him. You're an African American group that's inclusive. And he became profound. I think the most profound thing that I had the pleasure of witnessing, at being so close with him, is watching his transformation. Watching what the promises look like. Because 10 years ago, 14 years ago, when he was going in and out, he was angry, he was pissed. And this evolution in the last 3 to 5 years has blown my mind. You know, and I was just looking at the promises. And this is, I guess, the true testament of why we're here in the first place. And I checked each one that applied to him. I saw the promises come true in his life. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We would not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away, and our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And I look at him, and I think about my relationship. You know, when I get raggedy, because my shit get kind of raggedy on a regular basis, and I look at that evolution, we all have another level to go. We all have another level to go. And that's my reference point. I can look at him and see how he reached those levels. Thanks for letting me share.
Excellent. We try sometimes so hard, and if we don't have an example like M, you know, we falter, but we have that example now. The last speaker is Tim, and Tim begged Patty. Let me talk, please. Tim's been coming to the meditation, the Twin Hearts meditation that we do. When he first came in, I thought, who is M dragging in now? Like, who is this kid? He came in all kind of scroungy and everything, and just in the 1 year's time, he's upright, he's eye contact, he's saying hello, he's self-sufficient, he's helping out, and I know that's M, because I can smell the signature of M on people's hearts. So Tim, if you could please come up.
Oh, wow. Hi. Man, there's a bunch of people here. Okay, so yeah, I wrote little notes to help me do this. So I met him at the Atlanta Men's Workshop. We started talking. He mentioned that he had a nephew that was coming to the halfway house that I was at. I asked him how old he was. He said he was about 19, and lo and behold, it was Max right there. And he invited me to come to a book study that he had on his nights at his house on Monday nights, and I did. And that's where, I met Glenn, I met a bunch of really good people there. Let me see. Well, okay, so at some point he got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and he kept doing the same thing as always, you know, which is not what I would have done if that happened to me, but I don't know. Maybe I'll get there. Okay, so anyways, he kept doing the same thing. I ended up relapsing. I spent about 3 months in the hospital. M came and saw me many times. I got out of the hospital. I drank again. I was at the utter bottom of hopelessness when I asked M to be my sponsor. M agreed as long as I would go to any lengths to stay sober. I told him I would. Didn't quite know what I signed up for. M was an awesome sponsor, a hard one, which is what I need. I remember having to redo my 4-step like 4 times. It's not very short. It would not normally be that big of a deal under ordinary circumstances, but I had to switch hands. I was left-handed, and I had to switch writing right-handed because of a massive stroke that happened to me, which made it sort of a big deal at the time. But it was like that, though. He just said, if I can't write my left hand, make the best I can with my right. And I did, you know. Like he went with me through all that, like the writing, like it was chaos. That's funny, she probably does. So M continued to work with me until the end. Several days before he passed on, we were at the Atlanta Men's Workshop doing step work. I'd been at St. Jude, Salvation Army, the Extension, countless rehabs, treatment centers, detoxes, etc. I saw M working with others for no paycheck, and something about that inspired me. M worked with me and countless others because he wanted us to find what had been so freely given to him, like his life depended on it. I will take what I have learned from you and apply it, like, I don't know what that says. Yeah, I'll take what I learned from you and apply it in my life. Very well, M.
Thank you.
sincerity. And now we'll have Ms. Carrie Jackson, who is Terry's wife. She's going to read a Native American prayer.
Hey everybody, my name is Carrie and I'm an alcoholic. She has to bring it down real low. I was honored when Patty asked me to participate and to read a Native American prayer. And I chose this one because M described his mother as being a Blackfoot Sioux, and he strongly identified with his Native American roots. This is a prayer by Chief Yellow Lark. I'll tell you a little bit about him. He was a chief and medicine man of the Lakota Sioux, and he's credited with the following prayer. Based on what is known of this man of peace, he wished most of all for all, both Native Americans and the white man, to live in peace. He wanted his people to enjoy their heritage and to remember what it was to be a true Lakota Sioux. Chief Yellow Lark saw much death and misery. He saw his way of life taken forcefully from his people. Perhaps his hope was that in the life to come, he and his people once again would be allowed to roam the celestial hunting grounds where their brother the buffalo would once again be their companion. And here's the prayer. O Great Spirit, whose voice I hear in the winds, and whose breath gives life to all the world, hear me. I am small and weak. I need your strength and wisdom. Let me walk in beauty and make my eyes ever behold the red and purple sunset. Make my hands respect the things you have made, and my ears sharp to hear your voice. Make me wise so that I may understand the things you have taught my people. Let me learn the lessons you have hidden in every leaf and rock. I seek strength, not to be superior to my brother, but to fight my greatest enemy, myself. Make me always ready to come to you with clean hands and straight eyes, so when life fades as the fading sunset, my spirit will come to you without shame.
So today is a good day. We're all here together. Tomorrow's another day. In a couple of weeks, the house will be really empty. Because M took a lot of room, you know. And there'll be empty seats in the circles he sat in. And people will miss him. And like he said, it's time to double up. M was the guy who fed the grass, who fixed the door, who took Patty to lunch, but he's gone. That part of it is gone. So I'm wondering if anybody here in the men's group would be willing to step up for Patty if she needed anything. And if you would you please stand?
No, you.
Yes, sir, that was my next thought. Thank you. So I brought my computer, so see me downstairs, please, so I can get your email and phone number. Patty's not a real big asker, so if she could just like kind of send a group email out and say, hey, you know, is anyone available to do whatever, then you guys could communicate that way. When we have been married, not we, but when people have been married this long, there's an entwining that happens, and half of us is really gone. And it's so different. Everything is different that they have to recreate themselves. The spirit will always live. The memories will always, the voice, and she's very spiritual, too. And, you know, every great man, right? What do they say? There's a great woman behind that. So as spiritual as M is as spiritual as Patty is. So they have their own connection now. They've got the hotline. We set it up before he left, and they can communicate. But it's still. There's also a phenomenon after somebody leaves, 3 months afterward, it hits really hard. The rawness, the missingness, the goneness, just just kind of tears us apart. So if you can mark down in your calendars to reach out to Miss Patty and her brother and his brother Christopher in 3 months from now, because like the next couple of weeks everyone's real busy and then everyone goes on with their own life. And now Patty has to recreate a new life. So just stay in touch. You're welcome. We will be having a meal downstairs. We'll have open mic down there. So our last act is Miss Barbara Hyatt is going to lead us in the Lord's Prayer. So if everybody could please stand and hold hands. And try and connect across the rows, so in front to back, elbow to elbow, like whatever you have to do, spinning around, make it happen. And Ms. Barbara, coming, thank you. One moment, please.
Let's pause for just a moment, and let's think about Patty. Our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. Forever and ever. Amen.
I wish I was a good life, all or nothing.
train. I wish I was at last on the south train.
Gonna miss your baby from running in.